for Night Train.
Welcome back to Cairo Nights. It is 6 minutes after 9 o'clock. As Lisa mentioned, still 1-1 in the eighth for the Mariners. Huskies losing down in the Pasadena to the UCLA Bruins just before halftime, 26-10. Bruins up in the 15th-ranked Washington Huskies. Oh. Keep talking about the hurricane and its effect and how we should help those who need help. And I would be I'd be remiss if I didn't mention the animals affected by these hurricanes. You know, we are pet owners at my house. We've got a new pup. A story the other day about how anxiety is hitting more Americans than ever. How anxiety is being recognized as a legitimate concern for folks, not just everybody. I think it's folks 18 to 65 should be checked for anxiety, for the symptoms of anxiety, for the effects of anxiety. Should speak to a healthcare professional, whether it's a mental health care or your physical physician, healthcare provider, about anxiety and its effect on people. And our pet helps with our anxieties at my house. Trust me, the last few years have been tough on everybody. The economy's tough on everybody right now. The pandemic has been tough. The political environment can be tough. All these things lead to heightened senses of anxiety for all of us. And pets do a lot to help alleviate that. They do in our world. There's an organization called Rescue Me. It's rated very highly by Charity Navigator, which is a website you can go to. If you ever think about making a charitable donation for any cause, for any, you know, whatever it might be, locally, internationally, humans, animals, whatever, Charity Navigator takes a look at each charitable organization and rates them on how much of your donation actually goes to the intended donations, the goals. Are they, how many animals are they helping? How many people are they feeding? Those kind of things. How much of your donation goes in and gets to where you intend your donation to go? Rescue Me has an excellent rating by Charity Navigator. Rescue Me helps feed and house pets that are lost during natural disasters, helps pet owners who, I mean, you know, having a pet can be a pretty encumbersome, you know, it can be a pretty big expense. It's not something we should just take for granted. Sometimes when folks are recovering from disasters, whether it's fires or floods or hurricanes or whatever, you know, caring for their pets can be a real factor and a real difficulty for folks. So Rescue Me helps those folks feed their pets, helps folks adopt abandoned pets or displaced pets because of these disasters. A lot of folks had to abandon their pets after the COVID pandemic. A lot of folks got pets to help, you know, when they were stuck at home, couldn't go to work, working from home, whatever it may have been, got pets to help make their lives better. And then when they returned to work full time, when their employers decided it was time to go back to the office, they couldn't keep their pets anymore. And various organizations are well worth time. Well, the Humane Society of various areas around here, from Kitsap or Tacoma, Pierce County, King County, whatever it might be, they all help in those regards. Whatever charitable donations you like to help, do something during all this to maybe keep in mind pets and the animal kingdom and how they're affected by these natural disasters too. I was thinking about all the talk we've been doing about Florida and whatever natural disaster it is, and how we should always step up and help our fellow Americans. Let's help our pets too, okay? Oh, with regard to working from home, there's a story that came out that I wanted to kind of bring up about how remote work seems to be the new possibility, if not reality, for a lot of us. You know, one of the things that happened before the pandemic was it was kind of considered or assumed we couldn't work remotely and be trusted to do so competently and responsibly. We had to be watched over when we worked. Folks felt that you couldn't work from home because you'd be too many distractions, too much slacking off, not a real effort would be made. It's kind of been proven that that's not the case. There's a story at Fortune.com, you know, the digital wing of Fortune magazine. And they're a pretty reputable group. They know what they're talking about when it comes to money. They talk about remote work and how we are all in a new reality post-COVID about remote work and what it means for us. It allows us to do things we couldn't do before, work in our pajamas, which is no small thing. It's a wonderful feeling. The year before I got back into radio last year, I was working in sales from Portland, Oregon, but from my home in Seattle, Washington, because I was able to work remotely and make sales calls and have sales meetings and sales conferences and work with clients remotely. Well, the story in Fortune says that working remotely could be the reason that none of us have a job in 10 years. That's a happy headline, right? Remote work could be the reason you don't have a job in 10 years. And what they're speaking to is, as more and more jobs become able to do from remote locations, it means that more people are eligible to do those jobs. And when we talk about a global economy, we've all experienced this firsthand. Whenever you've called some customer service number or whatever it might be, and you speak to someone who's overseas, that job's been outsourced to a phone bank, because that can be done at a lesser cost than having that work done, say, in the town you live in or even in the country you live in. And that saves the company money. A lot of companies have a fiduciary responsibility to their stockholders to operate at the most economically beneficial and way possible. Some companies owe it. It's in their, you know, their bylaws. They have to work as economically efficiently as possible. So some companies, you know, outsource their jobs because they're required to save money for their investors to turn the greatest amount of profit possible. This story says that because so many jobs are becoming remote capable, which we all enjoy, the ability to have the freedom to work maybe some days from home, some days from work, hybrid situations, whatever it might be. Matt was talking to me just today about how you'd be a huge fan of a 4-day work week.
And that's my personal wiring and psychology based on just experience. Like, I love this job, but there's something about the rhythm of a very short weekend where, for me, about the time I really start to relax is a very short window from then to the time that I'm starting to think about work. Because especially in this job, even though you're not on the clock or you're not at the office, you're kind of, your nature is to keep an eye on the world, to keep an eye on events, to see if something comes up that weekend that you might need to talk about on Monday.
Right.
So the 4-day work week idea was appealing to me because I think certain people, it's the right balance.
Well, let's do this. This story about how remote work could make all of our jobs, what we need to make in these jobs, the living we need to earn to support our families and live in the cities we live in, remote working could torpedo all of that. We had a story recently about how people could do the same job you do from a city where with a lower cost of living, and that person would do, as a national headhunter tries to fill a position, they fill a position with a person in a cheaper city cost of living-wise, they can pay that person less. So the company can hire that and fill that position for less money than you'd make in our town working here. That's what we're talking about with remote work could undermine all of us in the next 10 years. So it's something to keep in mind.
Here's a fundamental principle that I have, though. If you are making large amounts of profit, if you are a profitable business, you need to pay your employees. I don't like this idea of entitlement from another angle of entitlement that says we can make as much as we can make and keep it all up at the top and move it anywhere we want. There is such a thing as corporate responsibility.
Yeah.
And this is part of the problem. If you ship these jobs overseas where you can pay it cheap instead of paying, and I'm not just saying Americans, I'm saying residents of wherever your company is based.
Right.
If you can't do your basic duty while maintaining your profit to keep your workforce suitably paid and suitably engaged and compensated for what is their time, their brain power, their energy, it's what they're trading for their salary with you, then we shouldn't be giving you breaks or letting you do business.
Send your hate mail to mattthesocialist@cairoradio.com. Now, I'm kidding, buddy. I'm kidding, of course. That's a valid argument, and I support what you're saying. But there are two people can be right at the same time. There are companies that have a responsibility to make as much money as possible, to turn as high a profit as possible. Companies that are publicly traded, that have stockholders. There's a fiduciary responsibility to make sure that you're making the maximum amount of profits for your stockholders. You have to find the least expensive way to do business by your company's bylaws.
So, we are seeing a lot of stockholders, especially younger people who with investment apps and technology have been empowered. We're seeing a lot of companies and a lot of stockholders stand up and say, look, We don't have a problem with capitalism. We don't have a problem with making money or your products, but we want you to do it in an ethical fashion. And this is an ethics issue for me.
You're getting a standing ovation from members of the news team out in the newsroom, by the way. And I'm with you. I wish there were more people who were standing up and taking that position. I think it's safe to say that's a small minority of those folks who invest in a company in order to turn a profit.
I would say it is a minority of the investor class.
Fair enough.
Yes.
And what I wanted to talk about, these are very, very valid points and topics that are worthy of our time to discuss with the audience. Every one of these, whether it's outsourcing, whether it's remote work, whether it's paying a living wage, whether it's a fair amount of corporate's profit margin being sent downstream to the employees that make the business go. Those are all very valid topics and conversations to have. But let's talk about the three-day weekend, the four-day work week. That's what I wanted to talk about. Let's talk about something fun and good we can agree on. You said today that you could really get into a three-day weekend, every weekend, a four-day work week. And I've heard it said that, the reasons for a four-day work week, on top of the fact that it will lower the cost of doing business for a company to have to open their doors and power their factories and, turn on the air conditioning or the heating or whatever it might be to staff the building, to clean up after the shifts four times a week as opposed to five times a week will save a company money. It's true. You work, four tens instead of four eights. I think in Britain they did a study, an eight-month study with 67 different companies of folks working four eights as opposed to five eights. Not just spreading the 40 hours over 4 days, but the folks could be as productive in 32 hours a week as they could in 40 hours a week over 5 days. And the benefits were incredible. Now, this doesn't translate to all occupations. First and foremost, you got to realize that it's a case-by-case-by-case situation, the benefits of having four-day work weeks as opposed to five-day work weeks. And, and there are ways to massage different work scenarios where you're having 20% of your workforce stay home that day, right? You've got four-day work weeks, but 5 days a week across your entire workforce so that all of your workforce is only 80% of your workforce is there any particular day, meaning you have to occupy less space, run less power, electricity. And, there are ways to do this. But I think the point I want to get to is the three-day weekend. Outside of the ability to be productive and profitable in 4 days a week, and whether that's stretched across 5 days with, 20% of your workforce having off Monday, 20 off Tuesday, blah, 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 blah. The three-day weekend is what we need as a people. The two-day weekend it's never enough, first and foremost. It's never enough. Somebody told me once you need one day for you, one day for your family, one day for your community for a three-day weekend. You take the first day to heal yourself, to recover from your work, to replenish the things that make you the valuable employee you are, to dig into your hobbies, to relax, to watch whatever you want to watch, to maybe further your education, read a book, play some music, relax, just meditate, chill, whatever it is. Second day's for your family. If you have a family, of course, it's otherwise you get 2 days just for you. That's cool. But to reconnect to your family, to your kids, that you talk about the breakdown of the family structure in America, and that's the real root of all of our problems. It'd be great if you had a day that an extra day every weekend to dedicate to your wife, to your husband, to your kids, to your parents.
It'd be great if we paid people enough to own a home and to be able to live on one salary. But, that kind of went out of vogue several decades ago.
Well, and there's another show we got to have about when was America great? What are we trying? What nostalgia are we seeking to return to?
And that's one of the things that I think sometimes political arguments get wrong. Saying something is wrong or needs to be fixed or improved upon does not equally mean that everything is bad.
No, hear.
And vice versa.
Well, yeah, but that's
what people say. Well, you're criticizing me if you say, well, no, I'm saying some aspects of America for my life have been great. At the same time, if I see a good idea somewhere else and there's a problem here at home, I might say, maybe I better take a look at that.
I'm with you. It always drives me crazy when people give me grief for making charitable donations that go overseas. There are so many problems here to fix at home. Well, of course there are. And we as a family, my family, make contributions domestically. Of course we do. But there are places in the world that can't even imagine how the worst Americans live. I mean, I hope I'm saying that correctly. The folks in this country that are struggling, and they're struggling mightily, there are places in the world where that population can't even dream about reaching that level of toughness. And those places are worthy of our efforts as well. We work with World Vision. We have for years as a family. I've worked with them professionally as our radio show. We've done numerous charitable drives for child sponsorship through World Vision. And it never failed. We would always get the folks saying, you should be helping folks at home. It's possible to do both, folks. You can have two things going on at one time. We're capable of that. And we made constant efforts to make sure that we did work as a radio station, as a radio show, as individuals, domestically, whether it was food drives or whatever. We did annual radiothons to help locally. But we're also capable of helping kids around the world who couldn't even, you know, never had clean drinking water, couldn't go to school, you know, had no possible avenue whatsoever to find the kind of lives we seem to sometimes take for granted here in America. But back to the three-day weekend. Sorry, I'm getting a little offline here. That third day for community. You know, I mean, imagine if you had a day every weekend to do some charitable work domestically, to help out a neighbor, to get together and meet your neighbors.
We have become so disconnected from community. Used to be there was and admittedly sometimes it was phony or performative, but there used to be this idea that part of being a good, well-rounded citizen was some form of community engagement.
Yeah.
Not necessarily activism, but just doing something good in your backyard for your neighbors. And I think in a lot of places we've gotten away from that and it's made us more disconnected.
Absolutely true. Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. So, and that's partially, as you mentioned, we're all having to work harder and harder for less and less. We have less and less free time. We don't have single family incomes anymore. That seems to be a pipe dream anymore. An affordable home and a one income family where the mom can spend enough time with the kids so that when the dad or mom, you know, comes home from work, you're not strangers. Your kids aren't feeling neglected and forced to watch TVs or play on a tablet because you're just too busy. It would be great if we had 40 work weeks, 3-day weekends, single family income. See how we can fix all the world's problems, Matt? Just talking about stuff.
I would like to push back too and say this has nothing to do with laziness. Talented,
nope.
Hardworking people,
yep,
can still be talented and work hard, but they're going to burn out less quickly and be much better employees if they have a holistic balance in their life.
And that was the result of the study in Britain that I mentioned, that these 67 companies figured out that even though they were getting 32 hours a week out of their employees as opposed to 40, these were better employees, more productive, more grounded, more rested, more connected to their communities and families. It's a nice thing to consider. You know, as we talk about remote working and all the things that we delved into in this particular segment, touched on a lot of bases this time. But it's important to take care of yourself and your family and your community and your employer, and find a healthy balance.
And we are in the midst of seeing a shift in priorities. I think the pandemic woke a lot of people up to thinking,
yes,
in a more holistic and well-rounded fashion. Let's hope the employers get on board.
I hope you're right. And I hope we can. I think we can. Still in the bottom of the week, I'm trying to get an update here for the Mariners score, but Lisa will give it to us. We'll keep it posted. It's Cairo Nights. We'll be right back right after these. Don't go anywhere. Right night to drink at work, didn't I? Awesome. Way to go, Mariners. Yeah, thank you, Lisa, for that, man. We're sitting here punching updates on the computer, trying to do our jobs and still be fans. That's great. Great job, Mariners. Good job. Again, two games back of Toronto in the wild card race. 6 games to play for both squads. And that doesn't say we're locked into the 2 spot either at this moment, because The Mariners, Blue Jays, and Rays are all alive in the wild card race with six games to play each. Is that right? Oh, no. Tampa's got five games left on the schedule. Toronto and Seattle each have six games left on the schedule. There you go. Okay. I think that's right. I'm kind of wonking it out here a moment. What a great night. Yeah, good times were had by all. And the Blue Jays have seven games. There we go. That's right. Okay, good. And the Huskies are losing at halftime, by the way. I think it's 26-10 down in Pasadena, taking on the UCLA Bruins tonight. Previously undefeated Dogs at 4-0, 15th in the nation. Still have a half to play. We'll keep you. Well, we won't keep you updated. You'll be out here before that thing gets settled out. There's a story coming out of Olympia, and it's kind of an interesting story because it's about a homeowner and what her homeowners association is asking her to do. And this woman lives in Olympia. This is on the My Northwest website, by the way, if you want to read the whole story. Olympia woman is being threatened with fines over a sign that she's got hanging in her home. Now, this homeowners association has provisions against political signage outside your home. And a lot of places have that these days in this very contentious political time, and I understand it. This woman has a Black Lives Matter sign. It was at one time hanging in the front window of her home. She was then reminded of the Homeowners Association's rules and regulations about political messaging. And so she took the sign down and put it inside her home on her wall. Well, then the Homeowners Association contacted her a week ago saying that the signs, they made a change to the Homeowners Association's guidelines and rules after people complained about her sign, that signs cannot be inside on interior walls that face with windows that face the outside, because that was offensive to her neighbors. And, you know, it's pointed out in the story that there are Trump doormats in that community, that there are Blue Lives Matter signages in that community on flags flying, and signs and flags and doormats are different things. I think if you're trying to be honest and
Yeah, I was going to say, so there are certain items that are not covered by this policy that they can use to politic.
Right. Okay. Apparently. I think for me, the more troubling part of the story is you can dictate what someone has on their wall facing a window that can be seen from the outside.
Here's the thing that struck me, because I have somewhat of a convoluted mind at times. And one of the questions that arose for me is, okay, I'm initially inclined to be sympathetic to this woman.
Mm-hmm.
Initially.
Yeah.
I don't think that displaying a Black Lives Matter sign is inherently antagonistic, but I have my biases too. What if this were a sign for, let's say, a hate group? What if it were the neighbor? They've had situations – this is not the same thing because it's within their garage, but they've had situations where certain people in neighborhoods have kept their garages open and displayed neo-Nazi flags.
Okay.
Now, that's an extreme example.
It
but
is.
How would we feel about this story if it were a different type of sign?
That's a really interesting question. There are people who would say in their opinion that BLM is a hate group.
Yes, and I think there are some that would say
I think
that.
That's a perverted way to look at and a perversion of the movement itself. I think the Black Lives Matter movement is associated with riots that have taken place in this country. And I think like painting the Black Lives Matter movement as a terrorist organization or a hate group because of the actions of a very few small percentage of people would be akin to painting a political party as terrorist because of the actions of a few members of that political party. We wouldn't want to do that.
Well, I thought of a corollary.
Okay.
I don't know if the Proud Boys have a flag, but if they have
a flag. I think
they
use that, the don't tread on me snake.
Okay, the 3%ers, I think they have an emblem as well.
Yeah.
Okay, those groups, some of their members were at the January 6th insurrection in the Capitol.
Quite a few.
Okay. Do other people also have the right to display the symbols of those groups? Well, yes, they do.
Of course they do. So exactly. So making a generalized statement that the BLM movement.
And a lot of the people that would make that generalized statement about BLM are the same people that wouldn't have a problem with, say, the Don't Tread on Me or the 3%ers.
Right. You know, that would be akin to saying a stop the steal flag is a violation. In this community, it would be because it's a political statement. Initially, this BLM sign was in this woman's front window, and the HOA said, take it out, and she did. This woman took it out of the front window of her home and put it on the wall inside of her home. My problem with this story was, who's got the right to look in her windows?
Well, she's displaying it public facing.
Well, she's displaying
it. That people look at it.
Well, no, they're asking her to take it down or be fined because people can look through her window and see the sign and be offended.
But she's putting it in the window so people see it.
No. Well, it's not like, you know, taped to the inside of her window. It's on the wall of her living room, and that wall happens to face a window that can be seen from the street.
I'm just saying that in my estimation, her intent is that people look at it.
Maybe if they look through her windows. I mean, if you see where I'm going here?
Yeah, I
get what you're saying. If it was, say, a swastika, and it was on the wall of her living room.
Right.
And you could see it through the window. Would I have the same defense of that, saying, well, who's got any business looking through their windows? You know, if you're offended, it's because you chose to look through my window and see that flag.
But do you also think that there's some antagonism in the person wanting it to be seen?
Quite possibly. But and then we get back to the issue
that's
of...
That's subjective, though, and you can't actually judge that.
Right.
I think it may be part of the motivation is I'm displaying this so that people see what I believe in.
Then we're getting to the issue of is the Black Lives Matter flag a political flag? Is it an antagonistic flag to a certain element of our society? Is a Trump doormat not offensive to enough people? Or is that message more in tune to the people at the HOA writing these rules and guidelines? You know, she's this person in the story. And it's at mynorthwest.com. The person in the story who's named says that she feels that it's very racially motivated, that this sign is a problem for people. And I think anyone who has a problem with the Black Lives Matter flag may have, I don't know. I'm only speculating. We don't know what's in people's hearts. But if you've got a problem with the BLM flag, it may be racially motivated. Again, we're not, and we don't think it's fair. I don't think
both
it's fair.
All sides of this seem to have a lot of subjective interpretation
yes.
based on the motivations of the individuals
Absolutely.
Who either display or see the content.
Absolutely. And a lot of issues like this will always have that element.
But I think one of the issues that can bring a large number of Americans together, regardless of their politics or lack thereof, is that HOAs can be a pain in the you-know-where.
Absolutely. What do you call a group of Karens? An HOA. Yes. And again, send your hate mail to Spike the Socialist at KZOK. Or KZOK. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
What
send
year
it over
is
there.
This?
You'll never
oh
read it.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Send it over there.
Yeah, send it to iHeartRadio.com. No. I've got a lot of friends named Karen, and they're lovely people. This is a tricky...
It's ruined the name Karen,
it
just
really
like
has.
It's ruined the name Nigel.
Yeah, hear, hear, brother. Hear, hear. I'd go to a Karen Palooza festival to see nice people named Karen in their bands. I really would.
Yeah, there's an idea.
Wasn't there a Nigel Fest you were telling me about?
Yes,
trying to reclaim?
In the UK there is an event. I'll tell the story briefly. In the UK there is an event known as Nigel Fest. Now, in the UK, and I don't recall the exact statistics because, you know, math whiz, not me, but...
Good English, too, by the way.
Indeed. Speaking well is part of the prerequisite for doing this job, which
yep.
is why I'm amazed I still have
That's
it.
Why we're both working nights.
At any rate...
Carry on.
The Nigel Fest, in the wake of the rising star of Nigel Farage, who is a British politician, UKIP, UK Independence Party, I consider him... kind of the forerunner to what happened with Donald Trump. Because when I saw Trump go down the escalator at Mar-a-Lago or wherever the heck he was, Trump Tower, sorry, I saw and recognized a lot of his rhetoric as coming from UKIP and the Nigel Farage campaign as regards immigration, national sovereignty, blah, blah, blah.
Gotcha.
So the name Nigel, which used to be very often used for babies in the UK, is now practically not used at all. In the registry of names... Nigel is a statistical non-entity over the past few years.
Gotcha.
So all of the existing Nigels have gathered together in Great Britain to celebrate their Nigelness in fine form.
That's fabulous.
They that are taking their name fabulous. Back.
Yes, I love when people retake the name. I do. You know, I really do. And I'll say this, the queer community has made a genuine concentrated effort to retake that name and take the hate out of that word. I applaud that. I'm troubled by, I'm always disappointed, not troubled, disappointed that people want to paint groups with such a broad brush because of one or the actions of a very small handful of people. I don't think conservatives are bad people in any way, shape, or form. I've got certain conservative beliefs. I don't think Republicans are bad people as a group in any way, shape, or form. There are different priorities, and there are elements of all groups. There are elements of the Democratic Party and the liberal movement I find ridiculous. I mean, just ridiculous. And I wouldn't want all Democrats painted with that brush.
Defund the police to name but one. Get a branding
stupidest campaign of all time.
Jeez.
By the same token, I wouldn't want the Black Lives Matter movement painted as a terror organization because it's not justified. I wouldn't want any group painted by the actions of a small group of people. That's generalization, one of the seven deadly sins, I think. It's just brutal. I'm pretty sure I got that right.
It's the one I'm most guilty
me,
of.
You and me
quite
both.
Probably.
And I just don't think you should be able to look through somebody's window and see something that offends you, and it's their problem, not yours. Stop looking through people's windows. To your point, though, Matt, it's hanging in the wall to be seen by the public for a reason.
And quite frankly, some people leave their windows open because they want you to look, even when you don't want to see it.
When you don't want to see it. Amen, brother. It's Cairo Nights. I'm Spike O'Neill with Matt Butler. We'll be right back with your texts and your input to the show. We appreciate it. Thanks a lot for joining us tonight. We'll be right back. Folks, lots of fun tonight. I appreciate it. Matt, great job.
Always a pleasure.
Let's see. Take a look at the text tonight.
And then we get to the part that's usually a pleasure.
We talked a lot about, let me see, where should I start? Oh, somebody said, when I made a joke about how the threshold of entertainment for people has risen so high. It's taken more and more and more and more to impress us, to hold our attention. We're talking about news and how, you know, sensationalism has overtaken credibility in the news industry. And I made a comment that, you know, pretty soon reality shows won't be enough. We'll need Cannibal Island. And a texter commented, hey, Cannibal Island, that's great. But you forgot to mention a knife and fork. Three people, a knife and fork, one leaves. No, no, no. Knives are for amateurs. Real killers just need the fork. Oh. We talked about the sign in the window. The feeling here in our community about the sign in the window report is that Cairo did not do their homework and find out that the rules were and have mixed races and members of the African-American community here and feel safe. I'm not, this is confusing. I apologize. I should have read this prior to getting into it, but it's about the topic we just covered. So everyone feels safe here in our gated community, bottom line. I hope that's the case. I hope everyone feels welcome and included in the gated community. That's what I'm hoping. And I apologize, folks. I really should have done my due diligence on that one. We talked about the 4-day work week. In my experience, the 10-hour workday is a wonderful thing. And that this person has worked four tens, and it's perfect. The 3-day weekend, every weekend, the best times they've ever had worked.
Here's a text from one of our most loyal listeners. They loved working three 12-hour shifts at a hospital. Yes, the workday was long, but it was nice to be able to get into the groove of either work or home and have longer to do it. Good point.
Absolutely. I completely, this is from a texter about these. We talked about signages and whether they're offensive and whether we should paint all groups by the actions of a few. I completely agree. and find those groups repulsive. But the question is, do individuals have the First Amendment right to hold obnoxious beliefs and display emblems related to them? That's a tough question. Yeah. Folks, thank you so much. We're going to call it an evening. By the way, the M's, if you just joined us, we're glad you're back, and the M's have clinched. The Mariners beat the Oakland A's 2-1 on a bottom of the ninth, two-out, walk-off, solo home run to take the game 2-1 from the A's and lock themselves into a wild card spot. With six games to play, the M's are currently in the second wild card spot, two full games behind Toronto in the first wild card, with Tampa bringing up the rear, half game behind the Mariners. Hope you had a good time tonight. Hope you have a great weekend. Enjoy the weather. It's going to be summerish. Maybe the warmest start ever to October. Forecasting for 3 days in a row at 80 maybe or better in certain areas. That would be a record. But hey, you know, global warming, climate change got nothing to do with any of us. I hope you guys enjoy it. Be nice to your neighbors. Be nice to each other. Be good to yourself.
And don't look in their windows.
Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you later.